Hey everybody, welcome to the Lex G podcast. I don't have any movie related things. I've been working on a couple of these. I was doing one about music and it was fine. It was a lot of treacle and a lot of overshare, and one thing you gotta kind of, if you do too much personal on here, you know someone's gonna, despite what the movie 8 Mile will tell you, when you put yourself out there as a preemptive strike, you know, at the end when B Rabbit, he does, he says, I do live in a trailer park, I do live with my mom, and my best friend is an Uncle Tom, and all this stuff, and it deflates Anthony Mackie, it deflates their ability to hit him with the really, that is bullshit. You would think, that's a great plan, that's the root of comedy, that's the root of, you know, cutting yourself down, being self-deprecating as a form of empowerment, so, you know, it can't hurt. Quite the opposite, I find in real life, like in dark moments on the internet and stuff, when I've said I'm fat, I'm ugly, I hate myself, there will always be someone creepy enough to hit you with that, even though you're saying it's kind of diffuse it, and I know I'm going bald or whatever, and someone will be like, you bald fuck, like they'll, you know, people do not have it will not deflate them as it does in 8 Mile or it does in most people's comedy. In real life, that will become the thing that people will still seize on. That's kind of why people always say, like, be positive. Don't, don't be so down on yourself. Because when you put that out there, you get it back. Where was I going with that? I have no idea. Oh, I was doing a thing about music and metal, and I was talking about the influences of my mom and my dad being into R&B, my mom being into crooners, but not either one of them being particularly musical people, and how that shaped how I see music as lesser than movies. They're both totally valid art forms. I don't need to tell you that, but sometimes I do this riff that bothers guys in my feed where I'm like, you're too old to rock, you're too old to go to concerts, music's for kids, you can't be 35 driving to the steel mill and, hear like a new Cardi B song and have it mean anything, and people hate hearing that. They always, a lot of people do kind of agree with me, get what I'm going for, but some people, they're lifers with music, and that's fine. You kind of have to be a lifer. If you're committed to it, if you're like a metal guy, like I got a great buddy in my feed who looks like Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's got the gear, he's got the shaved head, he's got the goatee, he's got the Kerry King camo shorts. Every moment of his life is metal. He looks metal, he acts metal, he lives and breathes it, he still goes to gigs. That's cool. That's cool. I'm never dissing that guy. There's another great friend of mine, I won't say who he is, but he still keeps up with all this earthy pop and girly pop. And to me, I'm like, that's just ridiculous. Like, metal to me, if you were into metal when you were a teenager, it's like, that's your choice, you know? It's a life thing. And that's why when all those nostalgia reunion tours started coming back like 10, 12, 15 years ago, when like Crew and Poison and Bon Jovi, they hit pay dirt because it was like, those fans, you know, they kind of tapped out of music around like 1992 or 93, and they didn't keep up with like Good Charlotte or Fall Out Boy or The Killers or whatever. They're probably 5 years older than me, maybe. That was their heyday, was listening to Bon Jovi or Rat or, you know, so for decades, those bands were kind of through grunge, through nu metal, through whatever you would call that Hives, Strokes era, whatever, however you deem that kind of rock and roll. I'm so out of it. Guys like me and guys maybe 5-10 years older than me were like, it was like an oasis. And then when all these bands, it was like, when first with like YouTube and then with iPods and stuff, we could program like nostalgia, just like we could live in a permanent cocoon of what we listened to when we were 13 to 15 to 18 or whatever. I don't know what I'm going for with this. I was going to talk about metal, which is probably not, this is off topic, you know, this isn't a movie podcast, but metal to me coincided with college. Most kids get into metal when they're young because they want to shock their parents, it's scary, it's dark, and my buddy across the street had like Slayer and Quiet Riot and all the kids in my school. When I moved to Pittsburgh, like it was that 84, it was the year of like metal health, Bang Your Head, that Quiet Riot album with the guy. I was like, he looks so scary with that mask. But when DeBrow would be without the mask in his, like, you know, his ridiculously tight clothes and his dorky outfit, he looked like one of the Esposito brothers from the NHL. I was like, this guy isn't the scary mask guy. Like, he looks like Jason Voorhees on the cover, or whoever that guy on the cover was. It wasn't him. But the imagery of that band was, like, so severe and satanic to me as a 10-year-old. I mean, they were very light and popish rock. Classic rock almost, but that was big. Van Halen, 1984 was that year. Def Leppard had just come out the year before with, like, Photograph, whatever that album, Pyromania. Is that Pyromania or Hysteria? Anyway, that was really big. Twisted Sister. What's Twisted Sister? We're not going to take it. And they had the video with Niedermeyer and everything. And all the cool kids in school would listen to that. It was like rock music. I remember I went to a birthday party and everyone was jamming out. It was this girl. I had a crush on her, and we went to her, what would we have been, 11 or 12? 12th birthday, and she put on Jekyll and Hyde Together Again on Betamax, and I was in my glory. I was like, this is the awesomest girl in my life, and no one would talk to me. I was kind of the new kid, and I was a dork, and I was like, went off harumphing out, kicking the dirt and whatnot, and all the bros were outside blasting Van Halen. I was like, yeah, jump, you know, and Panama jump, and maybe a few days later, my mom was taking me to Hills. There was a department store called Hills. We'd go shopping. It was like a low-rent Marshalls kind of thing. It might have been exclusive to Western Pennsylvania. Maybe it was other places, but Hills was department store. I'd be so depressed. I hated shopping for clothes. She'd have to drag me around by my arm, and I'd be like, this is so boring. It's so boring. I hated shopping for clothes, and she'd dress me up like, you know, the classic kid look of that era with, like, brown corduroy floods with, like, blue jock shoes that were, like, Velcro with my, you know, fucking Danny Torrance bowl cut or whatnot. But I remember in the parking lot, I was like, here, and I turned up the radio. I was like, Mom, this is what they're all listening to. This is the cool new music. And it was Jump and Diamond Dave and whatnot. And she was like, no. She's like, that's horrible music. He has no soul. He has no soul. He doesn't have. My parents only liked, like, R&B or crooners, like Sinatra or, like, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Those were about the two extremes. My dad would have, like, George Benson or Rick James or Isaac Hayes, and my mom would be, like, more the Italian crooner with the soulful voice, old-timey standards and whatnot, bouncy, a tarantella maybe, but they did not like white rock and roll music. One time, before we moved to Pittsburgh, we were up in Maine, and there was the Cumberland County Civic Center in Portland, Maine. Civic Center, maybe Civic Arena. I was little, but Grateful Dead was in town, and we were out, like, buying donuts, and my dad would get his out-of-town newspapers. That was his big thing. He's like, I gotta get the out-of-town newspaper. He loved the newspaper, but he needed to read the sports section from, like, New York and L.A. and Chicago, probably, and Montreal or whatever. He wanted to read all the different sports writers because he was Mr. Sport. Anyway, we'd go downtown to, like, some shady, you know, newsstand, and, like, I'd be, like, you know, kind of trying to cover my eyes, but clearly there were, like, nudie magazines and stuff. And my dad was like stocking. My dad wasn't there for that. He's stocking up to read, you know, whatever sports writer is in, like, Tampa or whatnot. And he'd get a big old stack of papers, and he came back to the car and put him in the back seat with me. And I noticed there was a concert. We were by the Civic Center, and this, you know, there were fans and lights and a lot of excitement. I said, what's up there? What's going on? What's that? He goes, you don't know anything about that. And I'm like, what is it? He goes, oh, it's the Grateful Dead. I'm like, what's the Grateful Dead? He goes, oh, they're a bunch of drug addicts who worship Satan and sacrifice animals. I'm like, I found out later, like, Grateful Dead is, like, the most mellow hippie, you know, iconic hippie, you know, groove noodling music ever. But he painted this picture in my head of, like, you know, they're in there cutting up lizards and shit, or, like, chopping the heads off chickens, like they're in black metal bands or something. But because of that, like, I got into lighter music when I was real little. I listened to my first cassette was H2O, Hall & Oates, like, where they were staring meaningfully and very gaily at each other on the cover. And I think that was the one that had Maneater. And my buddy Joel was like, you gotta hear this new music, it's called Hall & Oates. And I was like, Hall & Oates? And I got that cover, and the guy looked like Doug Henning, one guy did, and the other guy kind of looked like Peter Cetera or something. And I got that, and I was like, this is pretty cool. And then that 83 year, I got really into Michael Jackson, like every kid in America did. And I had to have the definitive street album of my youth, which was Yes, the Billy Joel Innocent Man album. That was my hard rock. There's this guy doing this Jersey mook doing 50s doo-wop with the Keeping the Faith and The Longest Time and Tell Her About It and Easy Money. And I would wear that thing out. And I also had to have Herbie Hancock Future Shock because he had that Rocket video out with the mannequins and the scratching, which was the first time I heard anything even in the vicinity of what I would find out later was kind of hip hop in a way with the scratching. But I didn't even know, like, for years, a couple of years, I didn't know Herbie Hancock was jazz guy. I thought he was like some guy from outer space who sounded like the Nightmare, you know, the Nightmare band from Emmett Otter or something with that synth and that, you know. There was also Neil Young was around, but he was doing vocoder. There was an HBO concert that I would watch fascinated because Neil Young for like 1 year he wasn't the Roots, you know, earthy roots rock guy from Canada. He was like, he had wraparound new wave shades and he had this vocoder on his voice that would make him all synthed out. And I thought he came from outer, like Neil Young, I thought he came from outer space and did science fiction music. Like he reminded me of John Carpenter. Like I thought his mouth was a synthesizer from deepest outer space and he would hit these notes that were like dark E chords. And my first. I like John Carpenter movies around that time. I loved Escape from New York, and then I saw Assault on Precinct 13. And in a weird way, like Carpenter was sort of my introduction to that hard sound because he would have that open E, he would have that blues note, that classic blues progression to a lot of those, like Assault on Precinct 13. It's basically the Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin, which I wouldn't hear for many years later, but that's that got in my head is that's what. You know, dark, cool music. And like I said, I was out, you know, driving around with my dad late at night. Like I just loved that. And, you know, when I would finally see movies like Thief or The Warriors, Escape from New York, like something about big cities, nighttime, nightscapes, and that dark, like pounding E chord music and synth and shit. But I don't even know where it's going. Oh, yeah. So we got it. Like, I went to, you know, fifth grade, sixth grade. We moved to Pittsburgh, and these kids are, you know, all the cool guys are blasting their Van Halen and their Def Leppard and their Quiet Riot. All the girls are listening to either Let's Hear It for the Boy or that was the time the cool girls were listening to Synchronicity. That was like the most alternative thing you could get in Pittsburgh. Like, we didn't know about like Erasure, Depeche Mode, or, you know, The Cure. Nothing close to goth or really alternative, or no one knew what Oingo Boingo was. It was like the edgiest thing was like Synchronicity. That was for the little cooler girls who were a little more skaterish and a little more tomboy. But then like the babes were listening to they were doing the Let's Hear It for the Boy until I got to junior high. And my junior high was kind of a lot of dirt bags. There was a lot of dudes who were smoking angel dust, whatever that was. Did I do this in another thing? Like, what the hell was angel dust? Whatever. I probably did that riff just a week ago, so I'm sorry. But there was a dude who would worship Satan. He'd go out to the woods and listen to Slayer, and he'd come back all. I remember it that he was listening to Slayer, but no, in Pittsburgh, he was probably listening to Winger, and he was like the satanic guy. But there was this. One of the popular girls, there was this meathead dude. His name was Tony, and he played rock guitar. And he was very Italian, but he had a big helmet of hair. And we later got in a fight the last day of 11th grade, the very last day of 11th grade. This is cutting a few years later, but I wasn't taking volleyball seriously enough on the last day of school, 1990. And he cold cocked me like a chump. He just like took in a cheap shot because like the ball came to me and I was like swatting it away because I was talking to somebody. He goes, Hey, we're playing a game here. And I was like, dude, it's the last day of school, lighten up. He goes, this is serious. This is serious. And he went, oh, like he went rage mode on me. And we went back to the locker room afterward. He just cold cocked me in the face, just a total, like he hit pretty hard too. He's kind of a badass kid. And I gave him like the stare down. I just like stared. I gave him like the last 5 minutes of good, the bad, and the ugly, just staring at, glowering. And he kind of backed up. He's like, all right, man, all right, man. And I think maybe I tried to do this like demonic glare, even though I was a nerd who looked like Tony Danza. But anyway, back in eighth grade, maybe ninth, he had a girlfriend who was dipping chew, which is like the most Pittsburgh, like the hot babe in the class was like, she was dipping bandits. She had Skull Bandits. I don't know. Do you remember these? They were like a little pouch, like it would have the dip in a pouch, you know, so it would lessen it. You wouldn't get as much of the grit and the flakes in your mouth going around, but it was still terrible for you. But what girl, like, chews tobacco? She'd have the can. She'd do the little packet where you pack the can, pop, pop, pop. And the other girls were like, what are you doing? She's like, he got me hooked on it. I love dip. You know, it's like, watch movies where, like, guys get their girlfriend addicted to heroin. This loser got his girlfriend addicted to Skull Bandits, and she brought in the vinyl of Slayer. I think it was, I want to say it was Hell Awaits, but it was probably Rain and Blood based on the timeline. And she goes, fuck yeah, and holds up Slayer, Rain, and I was scared. So I associated metal with all the kids who were beating me up. Like all the kids who, like the tough guy, the Satan guy, the Tony Beefaroni kid. All these dudes listen to metal. There was a kid named, who was an okay kid, kind of a geeky redhead kid who kind of looked like Dave Mustaine. And he would bring his guitar into school, and we'd have like show and tell, and he'd just start ripping leads in the class. But he had like a tin can for an amp. He was not very good, but he was like squealing on that thing. We had show and tell, and he had his Master of Puppets shirt, and he was like wailing on that fucking thing. And everyone, he got like the big standing O, and they go, what do you got for us? And I was like, I'm going to read a little passage from The Shining. And everyone was like, oh Christ, not this idiot. Like everyone had seen The Shining's a great movie. Like no one wants to see a dork get up there. And yes, I did a reading as Delbert Grady or Charles Grady, whatever he is in the book. It was from the novel. I think I did a variation on the bathroom scene. I didn't say drop the N-word part. I don't think I got to that. Thank God. But I was just doing this. I did something about like, your daughter's corrected. And I did this horrible English accent. And the kids were all like... Like rolling in their chairs, like, what a dork. And it was like, the teacher was like, give me the cut it off. And that was, my talent was reading a page of The Shining by Stephen King. Well, I had repressed that memory. Anyway, then, you know, so I kind of turned away from music. And one day we had to talk about, I think it's CCD, which is where they send Catholic kids. We were going to talk about music. Like, we had like a guy filling in as the teacher, like a, I guess, you know, oh my God, am I that dense or that brain damaged? What do you call that teacher, Phil? I can't believe it. I was going to say a student teacher, you know, substitute teacher. Jesus. A substitute teacher. And he was just there. He's like, put on the TV. He's like, let's watch some TV. I'm just here to fill in because your teacher couldn't make it. And he put on MTV. And I remember it was like Motley was on, or Winger, Warrant, one of those things. Cherry Pie, probably. No, Cherry Pie was later. This was like 88, maybe. And he's like, hey, you guys like this MTV? We're bored. We're here. I don't have any lessons. What do you guys like? What's your favorite music? And we're going down the room, and guys were like, you know, some girl would be like Tiffany or whatever was popular then. And guys would, you know, name like U2 or something, or maybe The Crew, or getting close to a G. Anyway, whatever. They got to me, and I'm like, Paul Schaefer and his orchestra. And they're like, what? Yeah, or the NBC orchestra, whatever you call the late night band, whatever the incarnation was when Dave, I was obsessed with Letterman because I didn't have any friends. So I'd go and tape David Letterman, and I'd come home from school every day, get a big bowl of ice cream, like a little fat ass, and sit there like forward and through to watch Dave delighting with like Gary Busey, or like, you know, doing Dave's Rocks and Minerals. I thought like he was the coolest guy. And Paul Schaefer, that was the only current. It wasn't even current music. It was just a band leader. But I was like, Paul Schaefer can play any kind of music. And they were like, grown, dork, loser. You get a little cooler in high school. And I got into Aerosmith and Rolling Stones and Motley. And I was driving. You get your license around 16. You're driving up and down the road. You know, you go cruising. I wanted to be like American Graffiti or Fast Times, where I had my Chevy. I got my license. I couldn't wait. I know some of you guys... driving, you know, so there's guys on my feed who've never driven, or you know, maybe you're in New York or something, that's not a big part of your life. For me, it was everything. I couldn't wait to drive, and I was gonna inherit my mom's old car, which was a 78 Malibu Classic, maroon. It was all rusted out underneath. It barely passed what was called inspection at the time. Every year you'd have to warm it up for 35 fucking minutes just to drive it 10 feet. But I could not wait to get my hands on that car. And when I did, you know, this was like 89, and it was like Motley Crue had that Don't Go Away Mad, and Alice Cooper had that big single Poison, and he was in the movie Shocker, and he had been in Prince of Darkness. So I saw him and I was like, he was cool. And Motley was big, and you know, Dr. Feelgood was around that era. And then I had this crush on this girl, I would hang out with her, and her dad looked like, he looked like that weaselly guy. Remember in the Cradle of Love video, that yuppie, quintessential yuppie guy, and then the jailbait girl does the dance for him, and he's mugging. Her dad looked exactly like that guy, and I would go over to her house to watch TV, and that guy would come home, and he'd be like, out, like the guy didn't like me, didn't trust me or something. And I had, see if this sounds familiar, an Indian rolling partner. One of my buddies was this Indian kid. I'll call him Sanj for the purposes. He's a millionaire doctor now, so and I'm recording a thing about Motley Crue in my underwear at home in my one-bedroom apartment, but she might have been right on this. Anyway, she started inviting him to our outings, and I would seethe and stew. And one time I thought I had a date with her. I'm like, I'm taking you to a movie. She's like, I want to see Betsy's Wedding. It was this movie with Alan Alda and Burt Young, and I forget who the daughter was. It was, you know, a cast of millions. Joe Pesci's in it. Is it Ali Sheedy? Somebody big from, maybe Molly Ringwald, someone big from the 80s is the daughter in it. Marissa told me, I don't remember. It's a terrible movie, but I went and I was like, I got a date. Yeah. I called up my friends. I was bragging, and I go and I sit, and she goes, oh, wait, I invited Sanj too. Plop. He comes and sits down right between us. And I sat there with my arms folded, scowling. And I was like, I'm never talking to you again. And I became a spaz and wrote her this 10-page letter and put it in her mailbox. I didn't even mail it because I needed to get it to her fast. I didn't want to break the federal laws, right? That guy like chucked it by her mailbox, and probably where that yuppie dad found it and intercepted. And she probably never even saw this, but I cut things off. But I would wail and weep because there was that song, What It Takes by Aerosmith. It was like their big ballad about, well, there goes my old girlfriend or whatever. And I would be like, that's our song. That's our song. As if she knew, as if we ever really went on a date. But I started getting into Aerosmith and their greatest hits and Toys in the Attic and all the, you know, the big singles. And I was, you know, around the time I was in, you know, you get to be a senior in high school, you're kind of cool, you found your footing, I looked a little better, I had longer hair, I was skinnier, and I liked all these rock bands, but I also liked whatever the music, the pop music of that year was, like Bobby Brown, Young MC, the Humpty Dance. We would have a little dance crew, we'd go to the mall and go stop traffic in the mall with our like Zubas or like pegged acid wash jeans with like a sweatshirt and that chain that you'd wear and that rat tail or like a little, everyone had the crimped mullet, like the mullet that would, you'd have to have the curls coming out the back, it would be short on top, and in the back it would just do all this crinkly shit coming out behind your ears, and we'd get up there and like do the Humpty Dance or Bust a Move or whatever, you know, a bunch of fat Pittsburgh Yinzer dorks who probably met three black people in their lives out there doing the MC Hammer dance. And then that next year, the bottom fell out of my life. All my friends, I've talked about this before. Everyone went to college. Everyone, you know, found their own way in life, went away to school, were having the best time of their lives. And it was that year that like a lot of killer like rock shit came out. Like Guns N' Roses did the Use Your Illusions, and Metallica had the Black Album. Van Halen did the For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge. Rush had Roll the Bones. Ozzy had the one with No More Tears on it. I think it was called No More Tears. And I just got so into that stuff. I just got, you know, I don't know. It sort of went with being a little lonely. And and also grunge, of course. That was like that fall, as I was commuting, which I'll get to in a second, it was definitely like the Alice in Chains, Man in a Box came on the radio. I was like, what is this? And Nirvana just was like, I finally felt like plugged into what, you know, I had stepped away from music in junior high and didn't relate to stuff. And then, you know, just was into the poppiest, most, you know, basic forms of, you know, classic rock and stuff. And I liked the Stones and shit in high school. Guns N' Roses was a tricky one, though. Because Guns N' Roses was still in that, it started 87, but definitely 88 in Pittsburgh. It really came 88, and it was coincided with the Deadpool, where they used the Deadpool. They used Welcome to the Jungle for the trailer, and it was in the movie. It was Jim Carrey pantomiming to Axl Rose, and I was furious about this. I was like, how dare they put, because Clint Eastwood was heavenly to me. He was my god, my idol. He was my inspiration for life. I had posters of Clint Eastwood all over my walls. I would like worshiped him like he was Jesus. And he'd always, you know, Clint, you always got to have like jazzy tunes in a Clint movie, or the cop movies, the Dirty Harry movies would have that Lalo Schifrin music that's like do, that bass and timpani and the, you know, that shit. And then to have like this, you know, wailing, you know, bandana metal shaman rock and roller guy, to me at 15 or 16, I was like, how can you taint the beauty and the pristine innocence of Dirty Harry? Like, I couldn't have rock music. I probably like started writing like a strongly worded letter to the head of Warner Brothers or to Clint, which I thank God never mailed or whatever. I was so upset and I stewed, shaking my fist when I saw, and it's so ironic because then like 3 years later, I reinvented myself as Captain Guns N' Roses when those illusion. So I wasn't even, I eventually did end up buying Appetite for Destruction. It's great, classic and everything. I'm so weird that I always remember the Illusion albums better. Like, I was so into them. And I, this is kind of still for 18, 19, like, this is still my first tangle with like buying records. I didn't get that like there were singles and then filler tracks that you didn't have to know. I memorized every lyric of every bad filler track on both Illusions, every, you know, Bad Apples and Bad Obsession and, you know, Get in the Ring, obviously the funniest one. Like, that one was just funny, but like Pretty Tied Up, where he says Cool and Stressing, but as Cool Ranch Dressing, it's so embarrassing. And I would rock this. I still had the Malibu and I'd play it. And by this point, like, my buddies have gone away. So I'm in college, but I'm hanging out with high school kids. I thought it was the Fonz. I'd have this crew of 15-year-old grocery baggers and I'd drive them to the store smoking our Marlboros, trying to look tough, and blasting the Illusion albums. And they were like, man, you're so plugged into this. And also, oh, I can't believe I skipped over. That was Doors year, because the Doors came out early 91 in March. And I thought everyone has their embarrassing Lizard King moment. And then you go to college and everyone, you know, everyone thinks they're the Lizard King with that stupid ass poster of him shirtless. And we would hang out. We'd go to all night bowling and I'm hanging out with like 15, 16 year old kids and I'm 18. I should be off learning about the world and reinventing myself and the beauty and magic of the big bad adult world that's waiting for me and doing internships and working toward my major. And instead I'm going back to, I was a commuter, but I drove. I had that Malibu. And then somewhere during that, I believe that first year, the Malibu died and I had to get rid of it. It wouldn't pass the inspection. The engine seized or something. And by the second half of that year, all my friends had come home at Christmas and I was holding up okay with the loneliness and hanging out with 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds. And then when everyone came home with their party stories about, hey, some guy, this dude was like, this girlfriend would unsheath my sword, baby. And that was just like, what? And he would talk about getting blown by her in the bathroom on campus and stuff. And I was so jealous and furious and rageful. And I started getting really awful depression. And then my car conks out. So then I have to take the city bus, which Pitt is like 15, should be like 10 miles from my house. But the city bus, I'd have to take like 3 transfers through the worst Yinzer neighborhoods. And this is 90. Pittsburgh now is very cool. It's very hip. A lot of young art people and plugged in tech people, medicine. Everything is cool now. I go home. It's beautiful. Everyone's so nice and awesome. Early 90s, you're still talking the remnants of a bombed out city that had lost its big industry, which had been steel. And all these like kind of working class guys were kind of out to sea, and there were a lot of depressed parts of the city, and this bus would take me through all of them, and I'd be on there with like winos and people, you know, as you do on any city bus, pretty much any major city. But it was a nightmare. It was depressing. It would take me like 2.5 hours to get to campus to go to like, you know, 3-4 hours of English and film classes, and then I'd have to hop on like 6 buses to get home to work at a grocery store and tie the bale. That was my big thing. I had to get a bunch up the cardboard boxes and get out these big wires and they'd snap and fucking hurt your hands. And it was horrible, but I was working with all these like kind of awesome white trash kids, always smoking cigarettes, and then GNR and Use Your Illusion. I would drive them around, listen to the Doors and Guns N' Roses and then I got into Led Zeppelin and started knowing more about classic rock and stuff. And then like in the spring, like 92 or so, this 19 years old, this is how hip a kid I am. I went to my first rock concert at 19. Everything in my life is like behind the eight ball, you know, late bloomer or whatever. And, you know, my buddies are off, you know, studying to be doctors and go to the Greenpeace or whatever you do when you're 18, 19. And I'm like, I'm going to see Tesla and Firehouse. That's my first big concert, 19, AJ Palumbo Center. And the thing that pisses me off to this day is it was a week away it was around the same time as Skid Row, but with Pantera as opening act, which is a legendary tour where, like, you know, Sebastian Bach at the height of his decadence or whatever, but Pantera just kicking them, like, just, you know, overshadowing them every night. But they'd come out and do stuff together while they were all wasted and drunk and hammered, and it was like a party atmosphere. And instead of that, I was like, no, that's a little hard for me still. I got to see Tess, and Tesla came on. They did like 3.5 hours, and everyone was just there at the time to hear like Little Susie or whatever that stupid single of theirs was, and the Signs single, which had been a big hit around that year. Everyone's just waiting for Signs. Instead, they do a 3-hour set, and then Firehouse was the opening act with that "Don't Treat Me Bad." Is that what it was? So, point being, there definitely not the most auspicious concert to begin with, but I dug it, had a good time, and this is like that early '92 run, and the biggest thing in the history of the world was on its way to town. We soon found out was they were going to combine Guns N' Roses and Metallica for the big tour, you know, the big stadium tour of 92, the summer of 92, which, embarrassingly, for many years, this was like one of the defining moments of my life. I thought, I was like, it's the greatest time I've ever had. I was just so blown, you know, they were coming. And let's get to address the topic. You know, I was talking a little bit about Guns N' Roses, how, you know, I knew Welcome to the Jungle, Paradise City, and obviously Sweet Child of Mine, which I remember, you know, from like it was in like Bad Dreams at the end, and it was in State of Grace, but it would be, you know, on the radio. Obviously, I got into GNR, and then Mr. Use Your Illusion albums, you know, I wonder when they're going to drop The Garden as a single, you know, but Metallica is something in poser land. For me, it's I've never really admitted this because I talk a lot about metal on my podcast to my buddies on message boards, Mr. Metallica, Mr. Slayer, Mr. Anthrax, Mr. Suicidal Tendencies, Danzig, King Diamond, Merciful Fate, all that shit, Sepultura, Biohazard, Dog Eat Dog. Like I loved all the stuff around this era. But for Mr. Metallica, I have that shameful admission. I think a lot of like not very metal guys have to say about Metallica that they never. This is, I'm just going to kill me to admit it, but like I didn't own a Metallica album until the Black Album, which is the most. There's dudes. The thing about Metallica fans are so ferocious to this day. What's it been? When was Dave Mustaine last in Metallica? 1983. They threw Mustaine. He formed Megadeth, if you don't know. He was one of the founding members, you know, Ron McGovney was too, Mustaine, Hetfield, Hammett wasn't in yet, you know, Mustaine was their main guitar, anyway, well, James kind of was, but the point being, they threw, anyway, to this day, if you go on YouTube, there's still dudes pissed at fucking Kirk Hammett, they're like, Hammett sucks, he's no Mustaine, I'm like, you guys have had 38 years to process this and get over it, but they're still, so those guys are like, Black Album sucks, it's sellout, man, good shit was early on, Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, so the most poser thing you could ever do is be a guy who jumped on the bandwagon when Enter Sandman and Sad But True and Wherever I May Roam and Nothing Else Matters, all the big singles, they all came on, you know, and it was, again, that same season that I keep going back to, the winter of 91 into early 92, but like, I think the Black Album came out in the summer of 91, but I just associate all this stuff, and I had heard, you know, I knew One. I remember One because that was a video, their first video. So I knew that beforehand. I wasn't entirely like I'd never. And this girl that I would, who lived by me, would wear the Metallica shirt, and I was like, "Ooh, she likes Metallica. That's really scary shit." But I was such a nerd, Mr. Catholic, and everything. And something that really also should be said here is I had to wrestle with this as a pretty devout Catholic. I mean, I'm sort of lapsed in a lot of ways now, but I'm talking about when I was 18, 19, I was still, you know, my buddies are off at college getting BJs and stuff. I'm going to Stations of the Cross with Ma on Friday nights and, you know, going to the Holy Week masses and all that stuff. And to start listening to like this heavier music. And I like really did feel like it's so embarrassing. I was like, oh, I don't know if I should be listening to this. Metallica was pretty tame. Megadeth was kind of tame. But like when I had this buddy I would go drinking with, because he looked like Pancho Villa. He was like 17 or 18, but he had a big hog stash, like a big-ass Brolin, Nick Nolte and Q&A stash. And he was you know, 17, 18, we were well under 21, both of us. So, but we'd get into bars because I kind of looked like, I don't know, I looked more mature and I had, the big head of hair and everything. And I wore dress shirts and had like the Nick Conklin from Black Rain wardrobe. We'd get into bars. And anyway, he was kind of a lowlife and he was like, oh, can you front me another beer? Can you get me another beer? You know, you make more money than me. I'll pay you back, man. And his payments were dubbing me off cheap, horribly dubbed cassettes of Slayer albums, and I was like, wrestling with like, oh, how can I listen to Hell Awaits and Captor of Sin and then go to Mass? And I'd in my mind I do a little rationalization to Jesus, like, I know it's just the music, I like the guitar, I don't really worship Satan or anything. Like, I actually felt guilt or some need to justify this. But going back to Metallica, yeah, like the Black Album stuff was great, but then I wanted to hear it all. And especially when I immediately went out and got Ride the Lightning, Master Puppets. Then the one I loved was Injustice for All, just because I love that. Everyone hates the production of Injustice for All. They hate that thin tone and cutting out the bass. I love it. To me, it's just like, my big thing was like, I always find bass intimidating because like people in their cars and you have a neighbor with bass, it's annoying. My old joke used to be like, how about some treble, some nice tinny treble? And I just like that thin sound where it's like, it's like, I'm not going to do more of that, I'm sorry, but it's like so thin. That album of Injustice for All, it reminded me of like gunmetal, like Silver, just says so, like cold, and it had that certain amount of crunch and that trebly thrash sound to it. And I eventually, in this era here, I decided I was going to start picking up the axe. You know, at 19, I was going to become slow hand or something. But no, I went out and I was like, Mom, I have to have a guitar. If I'm 19, I'm asking for permission. But because I still live at home and I have this image that I'm going to go buy a guitar and I'm just going to be ripping on it. Like, I'm just going to I thought you just go to the guitar. I went to this. It was in Blonox, Pennsylvania, which is a glorious town if you know Western PA. And there was this place called Pianos and stuff. She's like, all right, you can get a guitar. And I had had a little acoustic that I had dicked around with for years. And I have no musical acumen, no ability whatsoever. But I was like, come take me out there, I'll buy the cheapest electric guitar. And the cheapest one was this. I showed him my video sometime. It's an Epiphone. It's like a ripoff. It's the cheap Gibson, but it looks like a ripoff Fender. And I got it home. Actually, no, it wasn't even when I got home. I was, the kid is like, you go in there, there's always some smarmy dude, some guy. And he's like, here, let me hear you rip. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I knew one thing. I knew Danzig, Twist of Cain, but I didn't know I don't know progressions, notes, anything. I just knew how to do the riff because my buddy with the poncho via stash had showed me a few basic things, like maybe Enter Sandman, and I was doing Twist of Cain, but I plugged it in and it was the bargain basement amp Epiphone. Why the fuck would you care about this anyway? But it had no distortion, no reverb, no nothing. It had volume, bass, and treble. And I plugged it in and it didn't even sound as thick as an acoustic guitar. It just sounded like plinking. It was like down, 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 down. It was terrible, terrible sound. And I was like, yep, I'll figure it out when I get home. I'll take it. And I bought this guitar and I'm thinking that like there was a secret switch that made it make like Metallica noises or Slayer noises. And then when I got home, I was so mad and depressed and dejected. I didn't realize you had to buy all these pedals or you had to get a way better amp and stacks and shit. So thin, bad pickups and dinky sound. And I never got that thing to this day, I can't get that thing to sound good. But, yeah, eventually I bought metal pedals, but I was always trying to recreate that Injustice for All sound because that was my favorite one. But I was like, we're going to see Metallica. And of course, I got my little crew. And as always, I'm 19 and a half. And the other guys are like all still in high school. And I remember this concert came and I had begged my dad because my dad used to have a hookup. He's like, I can get you good tickets for that. And I can't remember. It's like he didn't come through or he was, all my buddies were buying theirs. And they're like, we're right in front of Axl, man. We're right in front of Axl. Like all the other guys from the store. And from, whoever's in my loser crew that wasn't going with my posse. But I told my three or four guys, you just wait. My dad's going to get us the sweetest seats in the house. We're going to be like under the stage, man. And then they were okay, but we were like still, this was at Three River Stadium. We were like half a baseball field away. And like, we were like waving to all the dudes who bought them right away down in front of like Hetfield. So we're like way back there, but it was fine. And there was like a monsoon during Metallica. Actually, the opening act was Faith No More, who I like too. You know, they had Epic and all that stuff and the Angel Dust album. And I, that, what's his name? The Mike, what the hell? Mike Patney comes out and he was like wrapping himself in the Three River Stadium baseball tarp and got stuck in it. And then it started a monsoon and Metallica came out and they played forever. And it was like our shoes were soaked and everything. And I was like, so I would love to see. I would say like the most embarrassing moment in the history of your life, no matter what you do, all the shame, all the embarrassment, nothing is more embarrassing than the way you're acting at a metal concert, like doing the scrunching faces, like you're consumed by the power of the music. You got to make stupid faces and mugging and air guitaring and rocking out. And my real favorite is if you played a little cool, you have to, because I've seen Pantera. And we go to Pantera, you can't just, you can spaz, you can mosh and stuff, but you also have to give it the Phil Anselmo look of badass acknowledgement. Like, you just go around at a Pantera show, you're just looking at all the other dudes, you gotta, like, kind of hunch your shoulders, kind of do, like, a posture, like, mean mug it, and just look at everybody, like, hey, what's up, man? You know, you got this look, you have this stare, like, it's a little, you gotta, act like you got a dip in your mouth, you gotta, like, clench your jaw, kind of, like, subtly do, like, a weightlifter kind of pose with your two arms, and you just look at everybody and give them the nod. The nod is like the nod of acknowledgement that you're all consumed by the power of metal. You're like, hey, what's up, man? What's up? What? You know, you kind of turn into Anselmo. You're like, god damn, what's up, man? Hey, you know, you're like looking at everybody. You're so like macho and pumped up and amped. It's like, but it's cool when you'd go to metal shows because you'd think it would be, these were all the scary kids from high school. But you get there and like, you get in the pit and stuff. Everyone's all supportive and like helping you out. And you just give the nod, man. You got to give that nod. So, yeah, so we saw Metallica, we saw GNR, we saw Ozzy later that year. Some girl wanted to see Rush, and I wasn't a huge Rush. I mean, I knew the singles like Working Man and Limelight, Spirit of Radio, you know, the big hits. But I went out, I was like, it was a girl, so I was like, I'm going to go to a concert. But how do I act at a concert with a girl? Like, can you rock out and spaz and air guitar and make stupid faces? She was like this kind of hippie girl, was a little older than me, and we were just platonic friends, but I just didn't want to act like a dork around her. You know, I didn't want to embarrass myself like doing stupid shit. So what I wanted to know about, I was like, I'm going out and buying all the Rush I can. And I bought some like triple, quadruple cassette of every stupid song about trees from some concept album. And I'm like trying to listen to it in my car, like, can I just know Working Man to get through this? And they had opening act, Mr. Big. It was like some of these things, it was funny. Like I was talking about Skid Row, Pantera, and these mixes of things were like kind of a cool band. And then like the opener would be like some hair metal kind of guy. Like I saw, yeah, like the Firehouse thing, and I'm trying to think of a better one. Oh, when I saw, yeah, there was a mismatch always. I got to see some ugly kid Joe that year. I was going, and meanwhile, just total poser. And then getting into the heavy stuff, man, like the Metallica, or the Slayer, the Danzig. I think Megadeth did the Countdown to Extinction that year, and I got in, I was like, Megadeth's cool too, man. But honestly, gun to my head, like, I always like the guitar. Everything about Mustaine, just, he's my kind of guy. Like, he's kind of an awesome asshole in a way. And I like now that he's kind of mellowed out. I always love that when metal guys, you know, the Ozzy template or the Tommy Lee, when these guys kind of age and mellow out a little bit. Nikki Sixx is a lot like this from Motley Crue. They kind of have this elder statesman vibe, and they're way more chill now. Anselmo kind of has this to some degree. But at the time, like, Mustaine was like a live wire, and it was cool to see him. But that voice, it was especially maybe on the Countdown album, because they stripped down the guitar and made the songs a little more basic. He's doing that, you take a mortal man. And I was like, why does he have to sing? Why can't he just sing like Hetfield? Because there's always the permanent, when you're a metalhead, there's always the permanent Metallica versus Megadeth war, where these Megadeth fans are like all the guitar wonks, and they hate that they kicked Dave out of Metallica, and they hate that that Metallica went mainstream and cut their hair. Like, Mustaine never cut his hair. But yeah, I went to see Megadeth, and they had Stone Temple Pilots opening, which is a cool opening act, but STP wasn't anybody yet, and it was at like the Civic Arena downtown in Pittsburgh, and STP came out, and Weiland had the bullhorn, he's doing his, you know, that Kentucky Fried Chicken foghorn leghorn, you know, all those guys like in that, like the Eddie Vedder, everyone just did that swallow the words, I have become cumbersome, they all did that voice, and he came out, he got booed. They were like, the Metallica or the Megadeth crowd was not having it. But I remember I went with this chick, but she was my roommate's girlfriend. This was the one semester I lived at Pitt, and my roommate was this guy, this Ted Danson kind of guy, and he had this girlfriend for a few minutes. She was real nice, but she's like, I'll go to a concert. And she had no idea who Megadeth was. And I'm taking this kind of like, she's like some Pittsburgh accountant lady. And I'm, she's like wearing a skirt and she's, you know, platonically there with me. We're, you know, I'm just, and she ran over a cat on the way to the show. Like it just ran into the car and it went clunk, clunk under the wheel. And I was like, wow, that just ruined our night. Like, this is going to be depressing now. Like I felt horrible. And it was, we couldn't stop to go back because it was on a, it was on 279 and heading at high speeds, and it was miserable. And we got there and we had these seats that were called like partial view or something, and it was way up, and there was like a block, the barricade wherever the set was, you couldn't even see around it, see the band, and we couldn't hear it very loud, and these two dudes just hit on her the whole time, even though like, A, she was there with me, but she's some other guy's chick, but she just was nice enough that she talked about accounting to two dudes while I sat there stewing that Megadeth was one of the worst concerts I've ever seen. But then I got into like Slayer and Danzig, and I would see Danzig, I think was the first or second time, maybe Faith No More, I went in a pit, and I was like, for a while I thought the pit was cool. Like, I can't imagine what business I had in a pit, or how gross and sweaty and kind of homoerotic and weird, like all these, and you would catch a face of that back sweat and someone push into some dude's back, and you, oh god, I can't believe someone as big a germaphobe as me. But I thought, like, you got to be in the pit, man, you got to sit up there in the pit. And one by one, I am realizing that I'm getting way older than each guy who's willing to go, and it's way harder to convince everybody, even when the mainstream acts come through. Like, the next, I'm asking guys, hey, Aerosmith's coming. Aerosmith's pretty universal. And I would ask guys my age, you know, they come back for summer. And I was asking, like, my real friends, my friends from before, let's go see Aerosmith. Let's go see Def Leppard. That'll be a good time. Let's go see Van Halen. And they were like, yeah, we're college kids now. We're cool. We don't get to see Van Halen. We don't get to see Aerosmith with Jackal opening with the guy with the chainsaw. So I would have to seize on the younger grocery bagger kids. And this is, to this day, probably why I shied away at music, or I thought it was just so embarrassing. I was going to these concerts, and the unfortunately, the coolest band, or one of my favorite bands, like I was saying, I went to Pantera. I had to get these dorks who didn't even, by the time Pantera came around, I couldn't even get the, like, 17-year-old. I was like, anybody wants to go? Let's go see Pantera. And everyone's like, dude, aren't you going to school for English literature? Like, it was so incongruous. Like, I was wearing, like, a bugle boy pants and, you know, the tucked-in shirt. And I had the hair of, like, Scott Baio on Charles in Charge. You know, going down to the Pitt campus to write a thesis on Russian literature and doing an essay on the Brothers Karamazov. And I was like, I'm going to go see Pantera with Biohazard and Sepultura. And I was so mad no one would go with me. And then there was this kid with kind of a speech impediment at the supermarket. It was nothing against the speech impediment, but he was kind of a dumb guy. He was like a big jolly dumb guy, and I was like, well, I'll go with him because he looks badass, because he was big but he was so dumb. He's like, I'll go see this, I'm not gonna do, I don't want to be doing his voice, but he had kind of a list. We go, I'll go see this band with you. And I took him and some dude who came wearing a tie and a white dress shirt. He looked one of the Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints kids who come to your door or something. This was my rolling posse to get in to see Pantera. And we got there and they were like, what is this? They were holding their holding their ears shut, and like they didn't want to come, they didn't want to go anywhere. And I was like, we gotta hop the fence, get in the pit, man. And I was all pumped up. I was probably wearing like a black Champion t-shirt and acid wash jeans with like white sneakers, like a dork. And they're like, we'll be back here, you go have fun. And I ran out and I charged to go to the stage, and I just sat there I stood on a seat the whole show, like doing the Anselmo look, like, hey, god damn it. I was like, just glowering at everybody, you know, just like looking out and like doing the ultimate metal face of masculine acknowledgement. And when at the end, I just had no regard for the fact that I dragged two guys who had no interest in this shit, and I was driving, so they were captive here. So I had to go find them. And even after the show, I was staying to get autographs from like Sepultura and Billy Graziati from Biohazard. It was like, good show, man, good show. I'm giving them the face and everything. And I go up, and those guys are in the parking lot, and they're sitting there like with their head in their hands, like the Al Bundy pose. They're like, are you done yet? Can we go home? My moms are going to be wondering where we are. And I was like, what am I doing with my life? What was that? Like, did I need to see that? And that's when it started to kick in. Like, you are getting way, you're all a 22, 21, but you got it. If with no friends, there's no dignity to this, man. And I sort of, there was one more show after that that was too depressing. I saw Biohazard with Dog Eat Dog and Downset at a little club show. And it, I had to bring, I didn't even, the, even the 15-year-olds were like, dude, we're not going to that. You have to go. And I went by myself. I'm like, well, I'll get down there. I'll see other metal guys I know. I'll do the face. And I went without my friends, got there, and they were all there. Like, they had held out on me and didn't want me to go and embarrass them or what. Or they were just like, why is this dude, like, why is this loser who thinks he's the Fonz at all these shows? And I looked around, and there's nobody anywhere near. No one else was going to Pitt. No one else was going for English Literature. Nobody else could have done a thesis on the films of Stanley Kubrick in this crowd. And it was Biohazard. They're all amped up, and like, they're from Brooklyn, the old Brooklyn. You know, they'd always be like, I bet you guys from Pittsburgh are pretty tough, huh? You know, we're from Brooklyn, but Pittsburgh's strong, yeah. And I'm looking around, like, all these dudes who are about as suburban and geeky as you can get, like Mad Dog, and like, they're in Biohazard. And I was like, this is, I got to stop, man. And that was when I was like, no more metal. You just got to let some things go. You're 22 years old. I was like, that's enough. That's it. I'm going to listen to my little, in my car, on my cassette, I'll listen to my Soundgarden and Alice in Chains and have some dignity and join the rest of my generation, like listening to, you know, Beck or something, and just switch to just alternative radio, but firm in my knowledge. You know, this is like getting into like that Erasure Bush, Dishwalla, Tracy Bonham, Eagle Eye Cherry year and whatnot. And it was around the time it was just before I moved to California, but I was like, especially knowing I was going to California, I just lost interest. I wanted to be listening to what the girls might have listened to, and I didn't want to go to shows. And since then, in the 27 years since or whatever, I think I've been to like 2 concerts. I saw Rage Against the Machine with a buddy when I got here, and I saw Velvet Revolver when they did their first concert in LA, because I just wanted to see, because I had been, it was nostalgic, but it was starting to come back around that it was okay. I can do this as a nostalgia thing and relive I was only 30, but this is okay. But that's where I formed my theory. Like, you got to just stick with what works. It's okay for me to go see Slash because I remember him. I mean, they're 10 years ahead of me, but it feels like my generation's music. I can't go see Cardi B or Louis Capaldi, if that's even his name. Is it Louis? I don't know. There's some guy. Or Zane. I don't know what any of that shit is. Or the Arctic Monkeys or the Jack Harlow or the guys who are on Carson Daly, where there's 15 guys in the band with a tambourine and a hacky sack, and the guy's in his socks doing a little hop around dance with a maraca. Like, what the fuck is that? I don't even know what that is. Just, you know, people talk about new bands anymore. They're not even new. There's bands, whoever they were, like all those, what I did, Arcade Fire, what's that, 15 years ago? No idea. I'm old. I can't go to that. If I went to that, and this is where I get in arguments with my buddy, which is what I started off saying, he's like, you still got to go to the shows. I can listen to music. To me, music is, it reminds you of your youth and rebellion and being a little badass and being a poser and experiencing girls and metal and anger and your car and romance and hatred and all the stupid edgelord shit that you go through when you're young, where you got to take it, you know, vicariously live through, you know, death metal or something. And then I'm 48. I go to a corporate job. I work in a cubicle. I mean, it's fun. That's why when like YouTube came back, I was in my glory. I could just, at night when I have my beer and whatnot, I can just, you know, relive 1992 in permanent, in perpetuity. But I can't be out there. I can't do it. It's just movies. I feel like if you're 8, if you're 80, you can enjoy the movies. Other people do check out on movies, but other people also revere music way more than me. Like I said, just by nature of my family, my mom and dad not being that into it, just was like, it seemed like a disposable art form that I associate with being young and hopeful and ridiculous and embarrassing and making a fool out of yourself and all these great first experiences. And then you're 35, 40. What do you relate? What, like, oh, hey, I remember this song from when I drove to a shitty cubicle job in 2008? Like, there's just nothing there, you know? It's sad, but That's me every night, man. I get on my headphones and I'm sitting there like rocking out, man. I have like 6 beers, 8 beers, and it's like, oh, I'm going to listen to Motley Crue and Metallica and Slayer. I'm watching all these old interviews and interviews with like Kerry King or Anselmo or Mike Muir and stuff. And it's like, I don't know. It's cool. It feels like I was a little bit, I mean, I wasn't, but just being such a fan of it for just a brief shining moment, I still get a kick out of seeing those guys. And it takes me back to that. But you can't, I don't know. I can't with any dignity. I mean, I think I was embarrassing enough at rock and metal when I was 22 that I think trying to pull it off in any way at 48 is no way. And then getting on board with anything new, like, I mean, what's the point? What's the point? I know that's a grim note to end on. And I know this was the most indulgent 45 minutes or whatever. This is like, it was funny because this was supposed to be about metal and rock and satanic music and shit. And I turned it into pure schmaltz with a lot of stuff you didn't need to know. And it was like, it was like my 700 Sundays influence on this podcast. Yeah, I don't know what the point of any of that was. It was just for me to ramble. If you like any of that music, maybe it gave you a laugh. If you have no idea what I just talked about, maybe I said it fast enough that it sounded funny. I don't know. You guys have a good day. I'm going to take off. All right, have a good one. Bye.